As I listen to the reading, sometimes there's things that stand out to me that I hadn't really prepared to preach about. And this occurred listening to the first reading, which is a really powerful reading, and hearing about these evil men complain how obnoxious this just man is. And so I just kind of thought to myself, you know, what if we were obnoxiously good? Just all the time. That what would that look like in each of our life? To be so good that we're actually obnoxious to people. I don't know, something to think about. But in our gospel, which I want to focus on, we have this really fascinating interaction between Jesus and his disciples. And I really love the interaction because it reminds us that the disciples are just like us, that they struggle with the same things we struggle with, and that the Lord calls us as we are. And if I had to make a title for this gospel passage, I would call it The Tale of Two Silences. Because there are two silences in our gospel, which I think all of us can fall into with our relationship with God. And so let's dive right in and look at that first silence. We begin with the gospel with Jesus telling his disciples a really shocking revelation that the Son of Man will be handed over to men, killed by them, and then rise from the dead. And to really understand how shocking this is, we need to understand some of the context. Because for the disciples, the Son of Man was a title. And there's a title for the Messiah, the one who would bring in a new reign for the Jewish people, almost like another King David. And so the disciples thought that the Son of Man was going to be this great and powerful leader who would bring in a reign of prosperity and rule for the Jewish people. And so for Jesus to say the Son of Man, who is this hero figure, would in fact be handed over to men and killed by them, would go completely against everything they're expecting the Messiah to do. But in fact, they expect him to do the opposite, to conquer those men. And so the disciples, as we hear, are rightfully confused by this, and they don't understand what Jesus is saying. Or maybe they don't want to understand. And here we see this first silence that they enter into, as we hear, they were afraid to question him. The disciples hear this saying of Jesus, and rather than ask for clarity from it, the fear of what he is saying, this notion of subverting their expectations, causes them to go silent. And why don't they question him? And I think it's because that they're scared of what the answer will be. They're scared that what Jesus says is going to be true. After all, what would it mean for them that this man who they consider to be their hero, who they expect to lead them to glory and power, is in fact going to be killed by the very ones he's supposed to overcome and defeat? So they're scared that what Jesus says is true and then what that means for themselves. And so the disciples enter into a silence of fear, the fear to ask Jesus questions. Now we can find ourselves entering into the silence of fear as well. Like the disciples, we can be afraid to ask Jesus follow-up questions because we've been scared of what the answer will mean. And what it will mean for us. For example, we can hear of a teaching that really challenges us. And you could kind of insert any hot topic in our culture today or just in our own life. And it's a teaching that maybe we're having a really hard time living by, abiding by. Maybe we don't really understand it. Or one that, if we're honest, sometimes we're not agreeing with. And we could be scared to find out more of what Jesus is asking of us through this teaching. And so, like the disciples, consider what you are afraid to ask Jesus and find what his answer is. Maybe it's in regards to a difficult teaching and a hot topic. Abortion, contraception, gender identity, immigration, social justice, proper care for the earth, how to vote. Maybe it's not a hot topic and just something that's personal to ourselves. And maybe we're afraid to ask what Jesus is asking of us. That dangerous question of asking the Lord, Lord, what do you want me to do with my life? Or what more do you want from me? Do not let fear of this answer silence your question. Because, as we see later with the disciple, what happens with the disciples when they don't ask, when they allow this fear of silence to have them not question Jesus, we see what happens. Well, they begin to argue. That certainly sounds familiar. That when we do not ask Christ for the answer to our questions, we begin to argue among ourselves. And yet any question we ask of Christ will always lead us to new resurrected life. Like the disciples, we can get hung up on that first part, that we'll be handed over and killed, and forget the second part, that it leads to new life and resurrection. Which leads us then into the second silence the disciples fall into, when, ironically, we hear that Jesus himself is not afraid to ask them questions. As he says to his disciples, "What were you arguing along the way?" And then we hear how they respond. They remained silent. We hear now that the disciples are not only scared to ask questions, now they're embarrassed to answer them. And so notice how these roles are reversed and how Jesus does what they could not do. He is unafraid to ask them a question, and a bold one at that, "What are you arguing about?" And then when they remain silent when he asks, he gives the answer for them, teaching them to not be embarrassed to answer his questions. Now again, we too can be embarrassed to answer Jesus, because like the disciples, we want to be on our best behavior, and sometimes we're embarrassed by the answer we would give. I mean, think how embarrassed the disciples must have been that not one of them wanted to say, "Well, Lord, we were arguing over which one of us was the greatest." I mean, here God is in front of them, and they're arguing which one of them is the greatest. It's pretty embarrassing. And we too sometimes can be trying to be on our best behavior with God and not answer the question he is asking, because we are embarrassed by the answer that we have. Answers such as we can determine by what he's asking of us. For example, is he asking, "What do you need from him?" You know, don't be embarrassed if it's something as small as, "You know, Lord, I just made a fool of myself in front of my peers, and I just need to know that I'm okay." Something as silly as that. Maybe he's asking what you are angry with him about. Don't be embarrassed that you're angry with him for allowing a loved one to die or even to suffer. God has big shoulders, and he can handle our anger. Maybe he's asking you to follow him. Do not be embarrassed to tell him that you're scared to do so and you're scared to where he's leading you. Do not let embarrassment silence your answer to him. Which brings us then to the closing of the gospel, which wraps it all up nicely for us. Taking a child, he placed it in their midst. I love this because it shows Jesus knows exactly what he is doing, which he always does. Because what is a child? But a child is never afraid to ask questions and is never embarrassed to give answers. If you would ever join us for our school mass on Thursday, you would kind of get a sense of that. I once was asking kids, what's something that we shouldn't do? And a little boy raised his hand and he said, "We shouldn't bite people." It's like, yes, you're right. We shouldn't bite people. He wasn't embarrassed to give that answer. And so I think this weekend, all of us are being invited to remember to be a child with God, to question him courageously and with wonder, and to be like a child and answer him with innocence and truth. And when we do this, Christ will, as he did with the child in his gospel, simply put his arms around us and embrace us.